You're listening to EPN, the E-Podcast Network.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, your channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who share business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. And now, broadcasting from anywhere between Brazil, South America to Los Angeles, California, it is your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, working in conjunction with our Legal Corner, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Today, we are speaking with expert marijuana attorney Michael Chernus, one of California's foremost experts on federal and state laws affecting the legal cannabis industry. Michael is founder of Chernus Law Group, PC, and co-founder and policy director of the Los Angeles Cannabis Task Force, whose members include hundreds of medical marijuana dispensaries. Mr. Chernus, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks for having me.
And you are most welcome, and the pleasure is ours. Now, as we know, California and five other states voted to legalize recreational marijuana, bringing to seven with a total of 65 million residents that have done so. More than half of all these states now allow some form of medicinal marijuana use and sales. Are we seeing a paradigm shift here in attitudes about marijuana, and what are the implications for national drug policy?
Yeah, there's clearly been a shift. It's been going on for about a decade, and it's picked up a lot of steam in probably the last 3 or 4 years. In particular, the shift was pushed along by legalization efforts in Colorado and then later in Washington and Oregon. So before then, a lot of states, now it's more than half had medical marijuana provisions, but the legalization push in several states has really thrown the development of the industry into overdrive. So it's happening rapidly. And what it says for federal policy, I mean, it speaks to a lot of issues. It speaks to a cultural shift as well as a legal shift. But what it says for federal policy is that the feds have, in the last few years in particular, essentially acknowledged that they don't want to use resources to prosecute people for marijuana crimes, especially marijuana crimes or activities that are taking place within states that have passed legalization or medical regulation laws. So the feds have kind of said, we're going to stand back, at least in states where you've decided that you want to allow this. And that has just had a huge effect in terms of encouraging new legalization initiatives. What it means for the future is a little bit in doubt, because the new administration has nominated an attorney general who has said some things in the past that cause alarm in many circles, including the marijuana circle. So there's a little bit of a dampening of enthusiasm at this particular moment in time. But if you step back and take sort of a macro view of the last several years, and you look at what's happened in Washington and Maine and Florida and California, I mean, the country is going, you know, from red and blue to green rather quickly.
Interesting times, no doubt. Now, what can we expect from the new administration in regards to regulation of marijuana? Has the proposed nominee for attorney general said anything about possible changes in the current hands-off policy regarding states that have legalized some kind of cannabis use? And how do you advise your clients to prepare in all these regards?
Well, Eric, that's the million-dollar question. And as I alluded to a moment ago, the appointment or the nomination of Jeff Sessions as the new attorney general has sent some shockwaves through the industry, because Sessions has kind of a tainted past when it comes to civil rights issues, and has said some really troubling things in the last several years about marijuana. He's on record as saying He was a fan of the Ku Klux Klan until he learned that they use marijuana. And then this past summer in some hearings, he made a comment in reference to the Obama administration's policy on marijuana. He made a comment because President Obama had made a statement at some point saying that he thought marijuana was less harmful than alcohol, which has long been a position of the industry. And Sessions had said in a hearing that he thinks that marijuana, the people that use marijuana are not good people. So him in particular as an appointee for Attorney General is disconcerting, to say the least. Now, that being said, I think a lot of what he has said about marijuana hopefully can be chalked up to just anti-Obama sentiment. In addition, the hope is that he's not really calling the shots on marijuana policy in the new administration, that it's going to be above his pay grade, either at the Trump level or at some other high staff level. And although I don't think Trump has spoken too extensively on marijuana, what he has said has acknowledged the utility of medical marijuana at the very least. And he's also been a proponent of states' rights. So the issue of sort of the feds taking a step back and allowing individual states to set policy is a states' rights issue, and it's sort of a core issue of the Republican Party and conservative groups. So I'm hopeful that that our fears will be dampened, or at least that our concerns will be alleviated, and the policy will continue as it is right now. But, you know, in terms of what I'm advising my clients, it's essentially, you know, I'm not necessarily telling them to abandon the effort, but everybody's being a little cautious right now and watching to see what happens next month during the confirmation hearings to get a better clue as to what the new administration's position on marijuana will be.
There's also talk of a green gold rush of companies looking to cash in from the recent wave of legislation efforts across the country. Is there one tip you could suggest for businesses to keep in mind if they want to join this green gold rush?
Yeah, the best advice for anyone looking to create a business out of this in this industry is to surround themselves with a trusted, knowledgeable legal advisor. Every state has slightly different rules. It's unrealistic, I think, to expect a lawyer in one state to necessarily be able to provide, you know, extensive sound advice on what's happening in another state. I've often been brought in to speak by other lawyers in other states to speak to their clients about what's happening in California because it's very nuanced. It's still unfolding. There's a lot of moving parts. So it's important to have somebody on the ground locally that you can trust. And you know, like any other, I've actually written an article on this issue about how difficult it can be at times to find a good lawyer in this space, because there's a lot of lawyers that are now populating it now that that are not necessarily that experienced in it. And it's a lot of the people in this space are not really equipped with a lot of experience in picking a good lawyer. Again, not to be redundant, but I've had a lot of people come to me after getting into a deal that they lost a lot of money on because they didn't run it by a lawyer first, or they went to a lawyer who didn't necessarily do right by them. And it's tricky and confusing because oftentimes in this space, the lawyers with the most notoriety aren't necessarily the best lawyers out there. That's really the best piece of advice I can give anybody.
California's population comprises about 1 in 8 Americans. How important was it that the nation's largest state approved Proposition 64 this past November? And what sort of signal does its passage send to the rest of the country? And how does the measure work? And how long will it take to implement fully? I know that's a doubly, triply loaded question for you.
Well, the first part of the question is easier to answer than the second. The first part of the question, in terms of, you know, how significant is it? It's huge. I mean, it can't be overstated. California is maybe the sixth largest economy in the world. And it's also, you know, there is a saying, as California goes, so does the nation. It's a trendsetter culturally. You know, if you look at the landscape of what's happening in the country now, in terms of all these states that have now either decriminalized marijuana, legalized marijuana, or made marijuana a medicine, none of that would have happened had it not been for California taking action in 1996 to pass the Compassionate Use Act. So California's passage of Prop 64 legalizing recreational marijuana is indeed a huge game-changing event. It really does, I think, give not only permission to people in the state, counties and cities that have been sort of reluctant to allow the activity, gives them permission to move forward, but it's also going to provide a further example of to other states to follow suit. In terms of the measure and when it takes effect and if it makes it easier for businesses to enter into the jurisdiction, the reality is that Proposition 64 offers licensing for recreational marijuana companies, but those licenses will not be available from the state until 2018. What's happening now is a lot of cities and counties are passing local ordinances to essentially adopt Prop 64 and allow for local licenses to be issued, because under Proposition 64, if you want to get a license from the state, you have to first get permission locally. So a lot of cities and counties are now, in the wake of Prop 64, passing their own local ordinances to license businesses so that they can ultimately get licensed statewide from the state. So this does create many, many new opportunities for businesses. In terms of out-of-state businesses coming in, under Proposition 64, there's a residency requirement in order for a business to get licensed. And you have to be able to show that you are a resident of the state as of, I think it's either January 2017 or January 2016. I might be off by a year there, but there's obviously workarounds to this by affiliating yourself with someone who is a resident and having them be on the application paperwork. So there's ways around it, but otherwise, and again, there's local licensing issues that have to be navigated. So you can't just pop up on January 2018 and ask for a state license. You have to first get a local license, and this gets back to, you know, the issue of, you know, hiring a lawyer and understanding what the legal landscape is so that you are prepared by 2018 to seek your state license for engaging in commercial cannabis activity.
Quite informative, and certainly appreciate your explaining this in depth today. We are speaking with Michael Chernus, one of California's foremost experts on federal and state laws affecting the legal cannabis industry, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Don't forget, you can follow the show on Twitter at ePodcast Network, and we're also streaming on demand 24/7 on TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. Now, Mr. Chernus, how has Los Angeles handled the legal marijuana opportunity compared to other California cities? And have there been any consistent approaches to regulation, or is every jurisdiction different, assuming that they are? And how does that affect the industry and the business opportunities here?
So that's another question that's got about five questions in it. I'll do my best to answer it. A little history is probably helpful here. So prior to legalization, and even and actually because the legalization licenses don't become available for another year, for the next year, we've been operating under what's known as a collective or cooperative model, where it's illegal to sell marijuana, but if you're doing it through what's known as a collective or a cooperative, then you can do it in a way that's legally defensible. but it's a little bit complicated, and it still has left the cities and the counties with authority over whether they want to allow dispensaries, whether they want to allow cultivations. So what you've had is a patchwork of local and county regulations. So even though, and a lot of those counties and cities are not allowing dispensaries, so even though California kind of has an image of being the green state, in particular Los Angeles, the reality is that many, many places in California, most places in California, don't actually allow dispensaries. It's really a lot, mostly the urban areas and some rural areas, but it's not as pervasive as you might think. Prop 64 provides, you know, a hope that that will change, because it's giving the local cities and counties not only financial incentives, but also kind of local permission to license the activity. So there's a whole, as you put earlier, there's a paradigm shift happening right now. But even under Prop 64, there's going to be some differences in how the activity is regulated and allowed on a local level. So it's likely that there's still going to be many cities and counties that ban it. And so you might have to go next to the county next door, the city next door, to go to a dispensary. L.A. has been its own story, its own unique story in this patchwork of regulations. L.A. has a sort of a tortured history with regulations of dispensaries and marijuana activities dating back to 2007, which we would need a number of different podcasts to cover the history there. But basically, it's been a flawed policy of either tacit permission, bans, partial bans, giving immunity to some dispensaries. The good news is that L.A. is, as a result of the efforts of the Los Angeles Cannabis Task Force that I'm a part of, and some other groups, we've gotten the city to a place where they're now embracing changing the current laws and policies. So the LA City Council is now in the process of putting on the ballot for next March a new initiative that will, it's super complicated, but effectively it'll give the city council the authority to license new businesses and different types of businesses, dispensaries, cultivations, manufacturing operations. So there's some hope that L.A. will come online and support the Proposition 64 and allow for licensure of businesses in all of the categories that are contemplated by Proposition 64. And we should know more about that in the next several months.
Lastly, Mr. Ternus, are there other changes in banking laws, zoning laws, other areas that need to be changed to allow the cannabis industry to truly thrive? And what's the status of these changes?
There's two significant obstacles to the evolution of the cannabis industry. One of them is a tax rule, a federal tax IRS rule known as IRS Rule 280E. And the other issue is banking issues. IRS Regulation 280E provides that marijuana businesses are, and any business that involves the trafficking in a Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance need to pay taxes, but they're not entitled to business deductions in the same way that other businesses are. This is really has a chilling effect on businesses, because it effectively means that with the exception of what's known as cost of goods sold, no deductions can be taken. And that's just, it creates an accounting nightmare and a financial nightmare for most businesses out there. Their efforts have been made to change IRS Rule 280E in Congress, but they haven't gained any traction yet. And similarly, it's very difficult for most cannabis businesses to maintain bank accounts, because the banks are subject to federal regulations and money laundering laws and bank secrecy laws, all of which make it a crime from the bank's perspective to allow for transactions in proceeds of marijuana activities. Effectively, if a bank takes a deposit of money it knows comes from illegal activity And because marijuana is illegal federally, it comes in that category. Then the bank is facilitating money laundering. So some banks have looked the other way. Some banks have allowed the activity under certain circumstances, but most banks are uncomfortable with it and are not allowing it. And it just creates this, it creates a number of problems, not the least of which is that you have a lot of businesses that are operating in all cash or that are targets for robberies. Obviously, then you don't have taxes being paid, money's being, you know, not accounted for, and it's just a real nightmare. And as many states have tried, and California is now looking at a solution to sort of figure out how to get the banks to accept the activity without running afoul of federal law. But ultimately, it's probably going to require federal legislation to exempt from the reach of these banking laws and these money laundering laws the activities in states where the businesses are licensed locally. So that was sort of a muddled way of saying we need help from Congress to facilitate the banking activity, and we need help from Congress to eliminate this obscure and outdated IRS rule that is unduly punitive.
Well, Mr. Chernus, we really appreciate your time today and setting it all straight in regards to federal and state laws affecting the legal cannabis industry in its most current status moving forward. If you would, tell our listeners where they can get more information about your law firm, Chernus Law Group.
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.chernuslaw.com. That's CHERNISLAW.com. They can Google me, Michael Chernus, or they can call our office, 310-566-4388, and or shoot us an email, and we'll go from there.
Once again, Mr. Chernus, we certainly appreciate your time and for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio and wishing you all the best.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We have been speaking with expert marijuana attorney Michael Chernus, one of California's foremost experts on federal and state laws affecting the legal cannabis industry. Michael is founder as well of Chernus Law Group PC and co-founder and policy director of the Los Angeles Cannabis Task Force, whose members include hundreds of medical marijuana dispensaries. And for more information in all regards and for contact, simply visit ChernusLaw.com. And this is Eric Dyde. You've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Pick up our iPhone or Android mobile app for your exclusive mobile listening convenience. And once again, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks again for listening to Enterprise Radio here on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. To subscribe for future programming, simply visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.